Friday, everybody. My name is Mike Cutler, and I welcome you to my program that, appropriately enough, is named the Michael Cutler Hour. For those of you who are familiar with me and this program, you know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And in the days and weeks and months after 9/11, I decided to provide my perspectives on the many failings of immigration and border security that, in fact, pardon me, not only contributed to 9/11, but in a manner of speaking made it possible, because first and foremost, the terrorists who so grievously attacked our nation more than a decade ago first had to enter the United States. But on this program, we not only talk about immigration, although that generally is my primary focus, we talk about a whole host of issues where our government is doing what would seemingly be the bizarre. Before we go forward, I just want to let you know that if you want to read more about me, you can certainly go to my website, michaelcutler.net. That's one word, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I'm also a senior fellow with a wonderful organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. As their name implies, they are based in California, in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara. I've been there a number of times, always a great place to visit, and we can see the financial mess that California is in, and this isn't about scapegoating immigrants, but about calling it the way it is. The fact that if we don't secure the borders, if we have millions of people in our country whose identities, backgrounds, intentions, and affiliations are unknown and unknowable, then we're going to have problems. With all the talk about the need to create jobs, the time has come for the government to enforce the immigration laws so they can liberate those jobs. Creating jobs takes time and money. Liberating the jobs simply takes having a government in place that has the will, an administration that has the will to enforce the laws, the immigration laws specifically, that have at their foundation two important goals: protect American lives, protect American jobs. Forgive me, I have a frog in my throat, I guess. It's been a strange day. We're running about 30 minutes late today, so I apologize for the delay in getting started. And by the way, the other website that I want to make certain to mention to you that I would love for you to visit is talkborder.com. That's one word, talkborder, T-A-L-K-B-O-R-D-E-R, talkborder.com, where we have video interviews as well as articles that I post for AND magazine. Very proud to be their senior immigration editor, and I also work with several other folks there. Charles Faddis, former director of counterterrorism, weapons of mass destruction at the CIA, has also interviewed me several times, and my interviews with him appear at AND magazine on his website, the United States of Common Sense. But today, we're going to be talking about the lunacy of New York's Mayor Bloomberg. I am a New Yorker, went to Brooklyn College. I guess you can't be more New York or more Brooklyn than that. So David Almasi, the director of the National Center for Public Policy Research, will be joining me to talk about the latest intrusions of our government. And in fact, I see that David is on the line, so let me bring him on and he can join me and have join the conversation. David, is that you?
I'm here.
Excellent. David Almasi, thank you so much for joining the program. Why don't you tell my audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've been the executive director for the National Center for Public Policy Research I've been there for 15 years. I've been executive director for maybe about 10 years now. And the National Center, for those who don't know it, is a conservative think tank on Capitol Hill, and we try to figure out places where the conservative movement needs to be a little bit stronger, needs to have a little bit more help, and we insert ourselves in the process. And that comes in this is part of our risk analysis division, where we look at how government regulates and try to figure out ways that they can regulate without regulating our rights out of existence.
You know, it was the Supreme Court Justice Brandeis, I believe, who talked about the best form of government is the least intrusive form, to let people alone to their own devices, provided they don't do harm to themselves or others. Doesn't it seem we've come a long way from that wonderful concept of what government is supposed to do, the idea about freedom?
You beat me to it. Yeah, I mean, it seems that there's nothing these days that the government doesn't want to regulate, And it would seem that they are much more interested in having a bureaucrat in a state capitol or city hall or here in D.C. making decisions for people that they've never met. They have no idea about their circumstances, but, hey, they're with the government, so they know better.
Yeah, that's always been a good laugh. You know, I worked for Uncle Sam for about 30 years, and if some guy wanted to get up in front of the audience and we were doing a conference or whatever, they would always get a big laugh by saying, "Hi, I'm with the U.S. government and I'm here to help you." And, of course, everybody would fall out of their chairs. Mm-hmm. And here we have Mayor Bloomberg saying, "Hi, I'm with New York City government and I'm here to help you." And now what he wants to help us with is to help us with our diets?
Well, where does it end?
Where does it end?
Don't even give him any hints. I mean,
I understood prohibition, but this is kind of ridiculous. Too much sugar in our soft drinks.
I mean, they have to realize prohibition didn't work, and yet they're going on with prohibition about, in this case, sugary drinks.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And this one, the problem I find with this is his plan is destined to fail. It's got loopholes that you could drive a New York City bus through. I believe it's just him being a bully. He lost. He knows he's lost, and there's no way he can control the people of New York and their independent-mindedness and their ability to make their own decisions. So he's just doing what he can to be a jerk, to be a bully, to try and get at least a little bit of what he wants so he can walk away thinking he's done something.
It's remarkable, isn't it, though? I mean, this was the guy who said that he didn't think anyone should go beyond the second term as mayor of New York City and then promptly engineers the system so that he could, in fact, run for that third term. And then after he wins the third term, says nobody else should do this.
Yeah, of course, because he's done it now. And if he wants a fourth term, well, he's gonna get it. And when I was doing some research on the story we're talking about tonight, I happened to find something else about there's some helipad in Manhattan that was closed by the government at certain hours of the day. I think it's like 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. You're not supposed to be able to land helicopters there. Well, guess who's been landing helicopters there in the off hours? The mayor and his private helicopter.
Let's see if we can figure the initials. Bloomberg.
Exactly.
It's astonishing. It applies to nobody but me.
Yeah. I mean,
or it applies to everybody but me, depending on which way we want to look at it.
Everybody else, they can be regulated, but not Mikey. Mikey's better than the rest of us, apparently. And, yeah, he can tell us what to do, but we can't tell him what to do.
You know, and what I find so astonishing, and, you know, my background, I spent 30 years as a federal agent. I spent almost half my career with the Immigration and Naturalization Service, assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. I was assigned to DEA Intelligence. We purportedly have a war on drugs and a war on terror. Of course, Janet Napolitano, the head of DHS, I've come to call that screwed-up agency, the Department of Homeland Surrender, out of frustration. But with all this talk about the borders secure, and of course they're not, and Bloomberg worried about salt and sugar in our diet, but isn't anybody concerned about the other powders that go into people's bodies, cocaine and heroin, perhaps methamphetamine? Not a public service announcement to be found about those powders, but plenty of public service announcements and news coverage of salt and sugar. Is there a disconnect here?
He's doing a lot right now to fight Coke. He's trying to get Coke out of your hands right now.
Yes, Coke as in Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola, yeah. And Pepsi, too.
It's absolutely astonishing, isn't it? And by the way, if you drink a drink that is sweetened with synthetic sweeteners, and there are studies that say that they may be harmful to our bodies, that's okay. Just not sugar. I have to wonder if maybe he makes money off of the synthetic sweeteners. What do you think?
I don't know, but one of the things that I find interesting about this is you cannot get a regular Coke, but you can get the unleaded Coke. You can get the Diet Coke, and you can get as much as you want. And
right.
My wife was pointing out, we have a friend who loves fountain Diet Coke, and he'll go out in the morning, and he'll buy the 40-ounce Diet Coke, and he'll probably fill it up with Diet Coke from a can or a bottle during the course of the day, and he has insomnia. and she thinks it's due to the fact that he's drinking the caffeinated drinks all day long. But apparently that seems to be okay with Bloomberg. It's just the sugar that he's having a problem with, and it boggles the mind all of the things that just are illogical about this policy that he's pushing on New York City right now.
Well, it's one of many. You know, he created a sanctuary, or actually I won't say he created, but he has continued the policy of sanctuary cities. There's been a number of terrible crimes committed because the police did not notify immigration. There was one case where I testified at a murder trial about 25 years ago. A police officer by the name of Robert Machete, 24 years old, his wife was pregnant with a daughter, stopped a guy who I had previously physically put on an airplane, and we deported this guy. If I remember correctly, he was a citizen of Panama. Ronaldo Rayside was this thug's name. He was a convicted drug dealer. He had a green card, lost it. He had his bite at the apple and blew it by committing drug-related crimes. We deported him. He came back twice. The New York City Police Department encounters this guy, arrests him. Each time, the arrest record reflected that in addition to everything else, this guy resisted arrest, yet they never notified immigration. Now, you know, reentry for a criminal is a felony. In fact, I work with Al D'Amato to make it a 20-year max for criminal aliens who get deported and come back. They did not notify immigration because that was the policy. The third time when Officer Machete encounters him, this guy goes for Machete's gun, bullets fly, he gets killed. I wound up testifying at the murder trial. It was awful. I met his daughter, who he never had the pleasure and privilege of meeting. Wonderful young lady. I've had many conversations with his brother, Tom Machete, who went on to become a cop. He's now retired and works as a police officer in Florida. So this has a real-world impact. So Mayor Bloomberg continues this policy of sanctuary, creates congestion in New York, and then to use that wonderful Brooklyn term, chutzpah, demonstrates chutzpah by saying if you want to drive into Midtown Manhattan and you're a New York resident, you have to pay a surcharge because of congestion. He creates the congestion and then wants to charge us. You know, this is better than Tony Soprano telling people that they have to pay protection money so that they don't throw bricks through their windows.
And if you're a small businessman selling a Coke that's over 16 ounces, the way he wants the law to be, you get fined $200.
I mean, this is astonishing. And then he said that the solution to unemployment in New York is to bring in more immigrant workers, which is, you know, I've compared this issue to musical chairs. Imagine that you're playing musical chairs, and we all know how the game gets played. The kids run around the chairs with music playing. When the music stops, there's one seat fewer than the number of kids, and whoever doesn't get seated has to leave, and they take a chair with them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bloomberg wants to have lots more kids come into that room, except these aren't kids. These are people looking for jobs, but not bring any more chairs in. So I was talking with someone the other day, and I said, you know, I guess Bloomberg's theory is that if you're sitting in a boat that has a hole in the bottom, the solution isn't to bail the water and plug the hole, but to drill a second hole in the hopes that the water will magically disappear down that second hole.
Yeah, the second hole will be the drain.
I mean, can you make this up?
No, and it's unfortunate, and that's the problem we have with government these days, is that there's so few people willing to take a second look at things. I mean, it's always, we got a great idea, let's put it into practice right away.
Now, you know what I find remarkable is you're a conservative, and I'm not. I'm registered as a Democrat. I can't tell you the last time I voted for a Democrat for national office. I think the wheels have come off their wagons, but I don't think the Republicans have been much better either, to be honest with you. But you see, there's so much agreement that most Americans would have if we really sat down and reasoned out what's happening, what should be happening, and what's not happening. And one of the points I love to make about the First Amendment is that everybody can rattle off by rote. First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion. But most people don't realize or have forgotten that there's two other components to the First Amendment: the right to seek redress of grievances, and the right to peaceably assemble, because the Founding Fathers understood that without discourse, debate, discussion, you cannot have a democratic process. And think about the fits that both Nancy Pelosi and Trent Lott had over talk radio. Polar opposites politically, but they both agreed that talk radio, where Americans could air their ideas, was dangerous to their objectives. Do you recall that?
talk radio, Tea Party, anything that gets in their face and calls out their stupidity they get crazy about and they try to stop. And unfortunately, that's something that we'll probably continue to have to deal with year after year after year. I mean, look what they're doing. Now they're trying to go after the Internet in some ways. So, I mean, it's hard for us to get our ideas out sometimes because of all the government meddling.
Well, you're right, and of course, corporations have an agenda in play. You know, I've probably done about 300 television interviews on the immigration issue because it's a multifaceted issue. I like to tell people that immigration isn't a single issue, but rather a singular issue, because it impacts almost every challenge and threat that we face, whether it's national security or criminal justice, community safety, the economy, the environment, healthcare, public health, education. Everything is getting hammered because we just won't enforce the laws that are already on the books. But what's so astonishing is that television no longer really wants to have these detailed discussions. Not that they were ever really detailed on most of the news programs. It comes down to a food fight most of the time. But it's almost as though the understanding is that if the American people stopped and understood the way we're being betrayed by our own government, where the immigration issue, where border security is concerned, that they would demand change, real enforcement, real dedication to carry out one of the most fundamental principles of government, to secure borders and protect the citizens. So it's not just censorship by the government, it's corporations leaning on the news outlets because so many people are getting filthy rich off of exploitation and all that flows from this massive influx of foreign workers. I don't know if you agree with me on that point, but that certainly seems to be what I've been observing in the last decade that I've been out there taking my show on the road, in a manner of speaking.
Well, I was wondering when you were talking about Bloomberg said that the solution was to bring in more workers. I was like, more workers to exploit?
Absolutely.
That's what bothers me in the topic that we're talking about originally, this sugary beverages ban. He is going to only hurt the small businessmen in New York by pushing this forward. He's only going to hurt businesses. He's not going to stop anyone from getting a sugary beverage, and that's his job, is to protect the small businessman, to protect the business interests and raise money for his city, and he's not going to do it the way he's talking.
It's remarkable. You really have to wonder what his thought process is, don't you?
Well, like I said, I think he's a bully. Originally, he wanted to tax sugary beverages, and the state lawmakers said, no, you can't do that, and we won't allow you to do that. Then he went to the federal government and said, I want to have food stamps restricted from being used on sugary beverages, and the Fed said, no, we can't let you do that. So now he's gone to the only people he can control, the health board that he appointed and whose chairman was with him at the press conference the other day. And they're saying, okay, well, we're going to stop you from having over 16 ounces, and it's only going to apply to restaurants, to movie theaters, to sports arenas, and to street vendors, as far as I've heard so far, and there's still going to be many months of creating these regulations. That's all he can control. He can't control the grocery stores. He can't control the convenience stores. He's just lashing out wherever he can to get what he wants, and that's the tactic of a bully. That's not the tactic of someone who's looking out and representing the interests of the people of New York City.
Well, you know, the only positive thing, I was thinking about this yesterday, the only positive thing that could be said about this is maybe people will get smaller doses of the Kool-Aid that the politicians are peddling.
Well, I mean,
how's that for a concept?
It's a limit to 16 ounces where he can get his hooks in, but he's even said, here in suburban Virginia, my McDonald's, they have the fountain, the soda fountain on the other side of the front window, the where you order your food.
Right.
So they can give you a 16-ounce cup by mandate, but there's no way they can stop you from going up 10, 15 times and refilling
it. No, and he actually admitted that. He did a news conference where he said, well, there's nothing that would stop somebody from filling up a 16-ounce cup two or three times.
Exactly. And he said,
so what's the point?
There's nothing stopping me from going into one that has the fountain on the other side, from going in and saying, I'd like two, please.
Yeah.
And there's nothing stopping. This is the one that really gets people laughing, is the day after the ban goes into effect, 7-Eleven should start selling the Bloomberg Gutbuster 80-ounce soda because they're exempt from it because they're a grocery convenience store. So there's going to be no way to stop the sugary beverages from flowing. If anything, just by being a bully, he's going to arouse people's natural impulses to push back. So if anything, I'd say, hey, Mike, you're going to probably be promoting obesity because you're going to push a New Yorker and he's going to push you back.
Well, you know, it becomes forbidden fruit. Like if I tell somebody you can't scratch your nose, how quickly does it start itching? But the other thing that's remarkable about the need to put their fingerprints on everything, except when they're being accused of wrongdoing, which is every other week. But, you know, but here's the deal, though. Two quick thoughts. Number one, he said that nobody should live in Gracie Mansion because he does not. Now, he just bought his 11th home. And even there, I remember I was going up to speak at a political campaign for the New York State Senator, Greg Ball, the guy who now chairs the New York State Senate Homeland Security Committee. I've worked with him on a number of pieces of legislation that I'm happy to work with Greg. But while I was driving up, there was a news conference going on, and Bloomberg and his people were telling New Yorkers, in the winter, you should let your house get cooler so you save on petroleum or whatever energy source you use. In the winter, in the summertime, your home should be warmer so you use less electricity because we have to reduce our carbon footprint. And I remember a reporter, Bloomberg had left, and the reporter asked one of his staffers, you know, Bloomberg's carbon footprint is about equal to 19 people because he started rattling off his airliner.
His private helicopter?
His private helicopter, he has his own airliner, how many mansions he owns and how big they are, or the square footage. And the answer was that Bloomberg was entitled because he does good work. And I have to tell you, it took all my self-control to maintain my focus on my driving so that I didn't veer off the highway. And I started to think of the soldiers who are putting their lives on the line for America, or firefighters, or police officers, or federal agents, or the surgeons who do God's work and repair those who are injured or ill. Think of how many people do good work, school teachers who are dedicated. So do they get a pass? No. But Bloomberg gets a pass because he's Mike Bloomberg. And that's what is astonishing. And then somebody wrote something once, and here's an interesting concept. Do you know why America's infrastructure is crumbling almost uniformly across the country? And this is an interesting concept. Brass plaques. Now, if you're wondering what I'm talking about,
when
the politicians get to build a building and they can put a plaque on the building with their name on it, and they figure the building will stand for 100 years or whatever, it's a monument to them. When they spend money on fixing highways or sewer lines or water mains, there's no ribbon cutting, there's no brass plaque to be seen, so they're not interested. They've got to leave behind monuments to themselves, just like Rockefeller with Rockefeller Center and so forth. How's that for an interesting concept?
That's a very interesting concept. Yeah, I mean, I can understand that, and I don't want to begrudge Mike Bloomberg the ability to spend the money that he's made. But to have the mindset of, I'm a master of the universe, I know more than you guys, so let me tell you what you need to know and what you need to do, that's where we need to draw the line, because there's no, I mean, common sense prevails, not smart and not having a good staff that can make you a lot of money. I mean, people need to live their lives the way they want to live their lives, and as long as they're not harming other people, there shouldn't be a problem with that.
I agree with you. But when they misappropriate money to build monuments to themselves, and then cities start crumbling because there's no money left in the coffers to do the maintenance because they needed to build this ornate monument to themselves.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the John Murtha Airport in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, or all the many monuments to Robert Byrd in West Virginia, when both of those states have problems that could be addressed, and the money could be better spent elsewhere. Definitely.
So maybe what we should do, just as a thought, erect sort of like a billboard with a big brass plaque that says, this highway was maintained by Governor Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe then they'd be interested in fixing infrastructure, you know?
That will, in my state, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, there was a big campaign issue last time over the fact that the previous governor closed a lot of the highway rest areas because there was not enough money in the budget, he said, and the guy who won the race, he went out there and said, one of the first things I'll do is open those things up so that people aren't dying as they're driving down the road or having to take a major detour or stopping on the side of the road and doing something that no one wants them to be doing.
It's remarkable. But you know, again, this idea that the government isn't supposed to live our lives for us. And increasingly, if you look at the regulation, and I think we have to have some regulation. You can't live in a society without regulation. But it gets so wacky after a while. And, you know, I know the work that your organization does is amazing. Judy Kent is amazing. Sherilyn has been on my program. Horace has been on with me. You know, you have a wonderful bunch of folks at your organization. Why don't you give out your website, by the way, while we're on the topic of your organization?
Sure. It's www.nationalcenter.org. So treat that like one word, nationalcenter.org. And we've got a ton of stuff on there. We've got a blog that gets updated almost daily, several times daily. We've got all our policy papers. We do a number of different subject areas. I mean, we're talking about regulation today. We do environmental issues. You mentioned Sherilyn and Horace. They're with our conservative black organization, Project 21.
Right.
And, I mean, there's just a ton. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff on health care, which is going to be a huge issue towards the end of this month and going on probably throughout the rest of the year. So please check it out. You'll be very happy about going there.
Yeah, and speaking about coming up at the end of the month, of course, we're also waiting for that decision on Arizona's immigration bill, SB 1070. I don't know if you know this, but I was very pleased and proud to work with a law firm that was retained by Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona to defend them against that outrageous lawsuit. I mean, isn't that a remarkable set of circumstances that a state has to promulgate its own immigration law that essentially parallels the federal statute? They didn't go off the reservation to do something bizarre. The law really paralleled federal law because the feds won't enforce the immigration laws. And they get sued, while states that declare themselves sanctuaries, and by the way, if you're a sanctuary, you're committing a felony. Because under the federal immigration statutes, if you encourage, aid, abet, harbor or shield from detection illegal aliens, you're committing a felony. So when you're telling law enforcement in a particular state or city or whatever venue, well, even if you know the guy's an illegal alien, and even if he stands accused of a crime, you're not to contact immigration. In essence, they're shielding that illegal alien from the federal authorities. The feds do nothing about it. But as soon as Arizona said, we're having a kidnapping or a home invasion virtually every day, just in Phoenix, the state capital, most of these home invasions, most of these crimes are being perpetrated by illegal aliens on illegal aliens within the immigrant community, because a lot of this violence was associated with the drug trade. We need to fight back. The federal government says, no, we're going to fight you. So I was delighted to be able to contribute a declaration on behalf of the defense of the state of Arizona and the defense of Governor Jan Brewer. Here's a case where the government won't get involved.
Yeah, New York is being a sanctuary city, but they're going against New York is being a sanctuary city, but it's going against people that want Coke that's over 16 ounces.
I mean, where are our priorities?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you look at the lunacy, and if you wonder why people feel so disenfranchised, forgive the word, alienated from their own government, is there any doubt why?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is this really effective government? Is this really going to solve the problems that we're confronting? And by the way, my wife made a great point. We don't do enough to educate our children. They've cut physical fitness training from many schools' curricula. Maybe if you got kids out from behind their desks and got them into sports and other physically active activities, you would offset whatever they were having for lunch or dinner.
That's what Sherilyn Harley would say if she was on with you today, is that that's one of her big things as a mother, too, that put more emphasis on what the kids are doing. And that's, to her credit, that's something that Michelle Obama has been promoting and been doing pretty good at that. But at the same time, we had a Project 21 member on a PBS show called To the Contrary. It's like a female McLaughlin group. She was on in January of 2010, and she said, I have no problem with the Michelle Obama nutrition standards or anything like that, but the one thing I don't want to see happen is the government telling my kid what, or telling me what I can put in my kid's lunch. Everyone jumped on her. Oh, that'll never happen. How could you say that? Oh, that's crazy.
And then you had that kid whose sandwich was confiscated. Remember that one?
Exactly. Less than 2 years later, you see that happening because of the federal government and because of these nutrition standards. And that's where it's just crazy. I mean, and in that case, I mean, we did a lot of work on that at our office. I mean, we had a lunch outside at a public park where we all ate the same meal as that kid was supposed to have. But that school, that day, because they were having a federal employee come to monitor what they were doing, they freaked out and they took away a little kid's lunch. And it was a little kid who was very picky about what she ate. And so the mother made a special lunch that she knew her daughter would eat, and they gave her chicken nuggets instead. There's just no way you can finesse that into, oh, we meant to do good. It was the government did wrong, and the teacher that took the kid's lunch away ended up getting fired, I hear. But, I mean, it's going to happen again. That's the problem.
But it didn't happen in a vacuum. No, it didn't.
No.
The climate has been created that the government is all-knowing. I think George Orwell would be astonished because the kind of world that he envisioned pales by comparison to where we've gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in the name of national security. And look at what we've done in the name of national security. And I'll give you another great example. If you look at Richard Reid, the so-called shoe bomber, he's the reason why when you get on an airplane, you have to take your shoes off. I do a lot of traveling. I do speaking engagements. I'll be heading to Washington in a couple of weeks, and looks like I'm heading to Nebraska in July. So those of us who do a lot of travel, most of us have loafers because we know the shoes are going to have to come off. Now, what's remarkable about that is we have to take our shoes off because Richard Reid was the shoe bomber. Well, Richard Reid was able to get on an airplane without first applying for and receiving a visa because as a citizen of Great Britain, his country participates in the visa waiver program. Now, he did that attack or that attempted attack. Thank God it didn't go off. Just a couple of weeks after 9/11. And back then there were, I believe, 26 countries that were members of this visa waiver program. Not only could Richard Reid still seek to enter the United States and an airplane without a visa today, because Great Britain is still certainly on the visa waiver list, they've expanded it to 36 countries now.
Wonderful.
So while, you know, TSA, 60-odd thousand people at TSA are groping 85-year-old grandmas and little 4-year-old girls that want to hug grandma goodbye before they get on the airplane, the fact that some guy who concealed bombs in his shoes could still be part of the visa waiver program if he took his shoes off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how insane is this?
I understand. I don't travel as much as you, but, yeah, the few times I do travel, it's just amazing to see, the way things are happening in the airports.
And we've been conditioned that, I'm actually convinced that if they really worked at it, they could convince most people to put on the exam gowns with their heinies hanging out the backside if they want to get on an airplane. I mean, could you imagine 15 years ago telling people, take off your shoes, take off your coat, do this, do that? They'd look at you and say, you out of your mind. And over time, we have been conditioned. Oh, this is what we're going to go to the airport, so we have to wear loafers. We have to do this. And so here we are with a little 3-ounce bottles of shampoo. Remarkable stuff. We've been conditioned that we really don't have a right to privacy anymore. It almost seems. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want to have a de facto window seat on a cruise missile. I'm all for airport security. But what disturbs me is that so many things that could be done and that would be reasonable are not being done. That's what I find astonishing, that if some 90-year-old man with glasses thick enough to stop a bullet inadvertently opened the wrong door at the airport, the alarm would sound, they'd bring all the airplanes back to the gate, and they go into lockdown. At the same time, God knows how many thousands of people run the border. We don't know who they are or why they're here, and we're told that this is considered business as usual for the United States.
And then to go to the complete opposite, something that we're doing at our office right now is looking at voter ID regulations and the fact that there's a lot of people out there now that want to say, you can't ask for an ID at a polling place. For some reason, the sacred right of voting is not considered to be something that you should have to show an ID for. We're not asking people to take their shoes off. We're not asking them to put a gown on, like you're saying. We're just asking people to show an ID, maybe even
not,
a room,
not a poll
show
tax.
A utility bill.
And it's not a poll tax. And I'll tell you what bothers me. And it's not only about illegal aliens voting. It's about somebody casting multiple ballots. You know, that old joke about vote regularly and often.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have one person casting 20 ballots in 20 different polling booths if you're not requiring appropriate ID. I mean, the potential
exactly.
voter fraud goes up exponentially when we do that.
And it's interesting that when James O'Keefe from the Veritas Project has been going around making those videos where they went to the, I think it was Vermont, New Hampshire, D.C., and they were just taking, they were going through the process to get other people's ballots, whether they were dead or Eric Holder or whomever. And the liberals that were against him on this were saying, oh, there's no need for voter ID, even though you're showing me these videos that we see no need for it, but we want to have him prosecuted because he was trying to take away those ballots. So it's like, okay, but he's going into the polling places. He's coming right up to the point where they're going to hand him someone else's ballot, because he doesn't have an ID, they don't have an ID requirement, but they're trying to ignore that. They're trying to ignore the problem, but go after the first, kill the messenger, and not listen to the message. It's just an amazing juxtaposition from the security state we were talking about 5 minutes ago.
Well, you know, of course they concealed it, but I was actually removed as an agent because I testified before a hearing in Washington without the authority of my agency right after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tom Tancredo at the time, head of the Immigration Reform Caucus, said, Mike, I'd like you to testify. I said, can you get immigration to authorize it? I was home. I had injured my leg executing warrants with the FBI and the New York City Police Department. We were executing drug warrants. So I was home. I said, look, I'll come down to Washington. Can you get immigration to approve? Initially, they said yes. 3 hours later, they called his office and said, nope, Mike cannot testify. He said, why not? We can't discuss it. So now I had the quandary of what do you do? And I looked at the destruction of my neighborhood. I took into account the fact that the ashes from the conflagration to Ground Zero landed on my home. I'll never forget that night of 9/11. My neighbors were all out of their houses, wandering in the streets. They didn't know where their wives or their husbands or their children or their parents or their siblings were. There were people literally sitting on the sidewalk in front of my house crying inconsolably. And, you know, I thought about that. I thought about the image of the emergency workers at St. Vincent's Hospital in Lower Manhattan waiting for the victims who never showed up. And that kind of ripped it for me because my first wife had died at that hospital of breast cancer a few years earlier. So it was that. It was the image of the people jumping. And I turned to my wife and I said, I'm going to go testify. And the next morning I got a package in the mail. I swore there was smoke pouring out of the envelope. It was delivered by special delivery, telling me that because I was physically unfit because of my leg injury, I was being removed as an agent. But we all know what the real deal was. The truth will set you free. Isn't it remarkable?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
We're having that thing. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so on the one hand, we're told we shouldn't be protecting any turf except the turf we stand on. Remember that great Tom Ridge statement? And meanwhile, we all knew what this was. It was all a lot of nonsense because it was still about covering their backsides. You know, 9/11, in my judgment, was preventable. We were attacked not once but twice in 1993 by terrorists who came to America by gaming the visa process, by gaming the immigration system. They entered the United States. In fact, one guy, a guy by the name of Cansey, shot up the CIA. We gave him political asylum, even though he lied on his application. There was still not enough integrity to that whole process. Another guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima was one of the bombers at the Trade Center in 93. He claimed to be an agricultural worker. The only thing he ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. And the Clinton administration, in response to both attacks, did nothing to shore up this lack of integrity to the immigration system. And quite frankly, George W. Bush didn't do anything either, except lock up Border Patrol agents who were trying to do their job. So it's both sides of the aisle that see political gain and put that over national security in the lives of our fellow citizens. That's what I find so astonishing to me. And that's why I'm thrilled you do what you do. See, what my goal is, and I'm sure it's your goal as well, is to inform our fellow citizens as much as we possibly can so they can make proper decisions and do not only what they need to do in the voting booth, and please, folks, vote. Don't sit on your hands. but engage your elected representatives in an honest-to-God conversation. Because, you know, in fairness to politicians, and I have a real problem talking about fairness to politicians, but if we don't tell them what we want, how can they represent us? We go to a restaurant, we're very specific about ordering the food that we want to eat. We don't just say, throw some crap on the plate, I'll eat it. And if they don't prepare it right, we send it back. Well, the trick here is that the American people really need to start to take government as seriously as they take sporting events. They need to know what's going on in Washington the way they know the batting average of their favorite baseball player. When that day comes, I think we will be taking a huge step in the right direction. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I can't say it better than you just did.
No, I thank you. But I feel so passionately about this. Because so many people are absolutely clueless. And it's as though they're expecting everybody to do the heavy lifting for them. And at the end of the day, this is the responsibility that citizens of a democratic republic have. And it's to be involved in the process, to not sit the dance out.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, so many people are more interested in voting for who's going to win American Idol or Dancing with the Stars than they are for their local politicians, for the people who are going to be regulating what they can eat, drink, where they can go, what they can put in their yard. And it's usually only when they get affected that they kind of wake up. When it's a property owner that finds out they can't put a treehouse in their yard, or hopefully it will be with a bunch of New Yorkers who find out that they can't buy a 24-ounce soda, but they can buy a 24-ounce beer in a restaurant because of some crazy regulations put in by, in this case, the mayor.
Remarkable, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to tell you, the time flew quickly. I know you said you wanted to do 30 minutes, and here we've held you for almost 45 minutes.
David, wow.
I got to tell you, say again.
Oh, I didn't realize that the time went so quickly.
Well, it's a good conversation, you know. I really am so pleased to work with you and your organization. They very often provide me with really terrific guests. Judy Kent does an amazing job, I have to tell you. She's terrific. They all are, and I really so much appreciate the work that you are doing. And, you know, we don't have to agree on issues, folks. That's the whole point that people seem to forget. We've become so polarized as a country where the mentality is you're either with us or you're against us. Democracy requires this idea of debate and discourse and argument if need be. Disagreement is as American as apple pie. We need to be respectful of each other. We need to come at this as an idea of how do we do things to make our government better, make our country better, provide greater opportunities for our citizens and greater safety for our nation. And those are the goals that should be first and foremost in our thoughts and in our aspirations. And certainly we're going to have disagreements about how to get there. You know, if you say to some guy, I'm going to Florida, one guy might say, I'm going to drive. Someone else might want to take a train. Someone else is getting on an airplane. And maybe someone else wants to take a bus. But it's not that one way is always right and the other guy is always wrong. We have to have a meeting of the minds, much as the politicians hate it, because the more we learn, the more we could see through their nonsense. You know, I've jokingly said that probably the ideal candidate for the presidency would be none other than David Copperfield, so that at least then we get a professional illusionist in the Oval Office. Because, you know, this is one of those deals where you either laugh or you cry, but it really seems that too many of our politicians have become illusionists. They just want to get the yes vote from the voters on Election Day, and then they want to forget about them. You know, it's really a bizarre scenario. They're beholden to the voter right up until the point where the voter casts the ballot, and then it's wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's the guy that spent the night with that pretty cheerleader, and the morning after he says, what was your name again? I mean, that's exactly the way the politicians are treating the citizens of this country in all too many cases. But my dad had a wonderful way of putting things. He was one of these guys who had an eighth grade education. He was a construction worker, but he was one of the smartest guys I knew. And he said to me that I would ultimately teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. When we keep returning elected officials to their elected positions, when they fail to listen to us, when they fail to act in our own best interests, who do we blame? The politician or the dimbulbs who voted them back into office again?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's there are so many people that think there's a problem with government, but, you know, my guy's okay. No, in most cases, your guy is probably not okay. But
and that's one argument. Of course, everyone hates Congress, but they like their congressman. The other problem is, I'm just one guy. What can I do? And I always like to tell people two things. The biggest flood starts with the first drop of rain, and if you go to parks, you will see statues of people on horseback, usually commemorating something great that person did at a moment in history when action was needed. A single person can make all the difference in the world. Really and truly, a single person is all that it takes at the right moment in history if you're willing to step forward. And it doesn't have to be doing anything great or monumental. Voting. Picking up a telephone and calling a politician, writing that letter, engaging in discourse with neighbors. You know, when I was a kid, and I'm sure you were told the same thing, David, don't discuss religion, don't discuss politics. When you go to a party, those are sensitive. Well, my attitude is religion is sensitive. A person's relationship with God, or even if he has or she has that relationship, is about as private and personal a relationship as anyone might possibly have in this life. But politics is something else. We should be willing to engage in those discussions. We should be respectful of those people we disagree with. We should be willing to listen because we don't always get it right. I certainly have changed my opinion about certain issues over time. You know, we try to learn something new every day. But those discussions and debates about politics are at the root of what a true democratic country is. So I would respectfully disagree with those people who say, don't talk about politics. I think that there is a time and there is a place for it. And I think that the neglect on the part of the citizenry has facilitated so much of the skullduggery that passes for leadership today.
Yeah, and if people don't speak up, they're going to lose their rights. And that includes the right for political expression and the right to religion. So, I mean, there is a problem with not speaking up.
By the way, what did you think of this bill that was just passed that said that if you're demonstrating where someone's being protected by Secret Service, it could be construed as a crime?
I didn't hear about that, but that's kind of scary because.
Yep.
I mean, it's a slippery slope because it's when is Secret Service going to turn to police? When is police going to turn to private security or something like that? And I mean, it's just like going back to our original discussion about the sugary beverages. 16 ounces now, when is it going to be other beverages? When is it going to be a smaller amount? And when is it going to be, no, I'm sorry, we're going to select what you can drink.
Yep. It's really remarkable. And you know, this whole idea about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, well, if for you, happiness is a 24-ounce drink. I mean, I don't want to sound corny about this or make more of it than it is, but that's what bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing illegal about putting sugar in a drink. But yet they're now saying, we're going to limit how much you can have. Well, today it's sugar, tomorrow it will be something. And this is the sort of thing that democracy is supposed to prevent from happening. The idea that the people have the freedom to decide for themselves how they want to live their lives and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sure you heard the story about the principle of the frog in boiling water, yes?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, if you throw a frog into a vat of boiling water, it'll jump out and run for his life. But if you turn the heat up gradually, you'll cook the frog. And I'm just so concerned that we have, whether it's being desensitized at airports, now we're going to be desensitized when we're buying beverages, that we will become more and more and more acclimated to government setting the standards and making the rules, even if they make no sense, even if there's no apparent good reason for it, they will do it because they can. And I think some people who seek public office do so because they're control freaks.
And I think a lot more of them are the pro-regulation people than are the pro-freedom people, because the pro-freedom people want to go be successful, go with their families, have a nice life, whereas the regulation crowd, the pro-regulation crowd, they live for these moments. They live to get into power. They live to get their claws into our lives. And there's more of them than people like us.
Unfortunately, I think you're... pardon me. I'm talking about that frog. It's back in my throat today. I think you're right. And that's something that certainly gives me cause for pause, should give everybody cause for pause. I'm going to let you go, David, because I've already imposed on you by keeping you here for almost 50 minutes. It's been a wonderful conversation. I have to have you come back soon because
sure.
I love your perspective,
feel free to call
and I love
time.
The work your organization does, I have to tell you.
Well, we're here to help you guys out, so feel free to give us a call, contact Judy, and we'll be happy to have someone on your show.
Excellent. And again, your website is?
www.nationalcenter.org.
Well, that's terrific. David, again, I thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Send my regards to your gang over there.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Be well. Thanks again.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, you know, this is what my program is about, folks. What we want to do is to be able to provide you with perspectives that you're not going to hear on mainstream media. Unfortunately, what used to be news reporting has become entertainment. If you don't believe it, watch most of the so-called news programs. We cannot be effective as citizens of this country unless we have an awareness of the issues and unless we allow that knowledge that we acquire to enable us to go after the politicians and make certain that they do what we find is in our own best interests. This thing about the soft drink isn't going to change the world, but it is changing attitudes. And at some point, someone has to stand up and say, this is enough. There is that so-called straw that breaks the camel's back or the so-called tipping point, however you want to look at it. And to listen to Mayor Bloomberg stand there and talk about why we shouldn't be drinking more than 16 ounces of a drink, it's remarkable. It tells you just how far we have gone from where the Founding Fathers wanted this country to be. I can't even imagine what the Founding Fathers would have been saying about the kind of lunacy that now passes for leadership, and not just where the soft drinks are concerned, but where so much of what these so-called political leaders come up with as a matter of routine. But again, I blame us, we the people, for not getting involved, not standing up, and not saying to these folks, we elected you to represent us, not to be tyrants, not to dictate how we will live our lives, because that's no longer a democracy. You know, what next? We'll wear uniforms? We'll outlaw certain colors? I mean, the lunacy that stands behind this kind of a supposed thought process should disturb all of us. Not that we shouldn't be eating healthy, we should. Not that we shouldn't be watching our waistline, we certainly should. But it's the idea that our freedom of choice is being taken from us should give all of us great cause for pause. I just want to, in passing, remind you about a couple of websites that I would very much like for you to visit. Again, I remind you that I am a senior fellow with an organization known as Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is CAPSWeb, one word, C-A-P-S, CAPSWeb.org. Of course, my own personal website is michaelcutler.net. And finally, in the website that I'm most excited about these days, talkborder.com. We have a bunch of interviews up. I just did another interview yesterday. So if you go to that website, we have 24-minute video television programs, the kind of programming and interviews that I assure you you're not going to find in the mainstream media. Again, my goal, especially since 9/11, is to provide perspectives and insight about what needs to be done and what is not being done in order to protect our nation, in order to protect our citizens. Because that, in reality, is what our government is supposed to do. First and foremost, a nation's responsibility is to secure its borders and protect its citizens against criminals or enemies or terrorists who would come into that country and do harm. That's the purpose for our military. And in fact, one of the things I do is to speak before military groups. I work with an organization known as Allen L. Freed Associates. They do seminars for the military and other federal agencies. And on a number of occasions, as I stood before generals and other high-ranking officials of U.S. military organizations, whether it's the Air Force or the Army or whomever, I've asked the question, why do we still have a military? Now, you can imagine that that question would not play all that well with that kind of an audience, but it's certainly, I think, a reasonable question and thought-provoking when you realize the way that we don't enforce our immigration laws. And it's funny because most people don't seem to get the nexus, but there is a clear nexus between the two things. And then here's the point. As I've said to those military officers, if you wonder why I raised the issue about whether or not we should still even bother having a military, if you look at the primary mission of any nation's defensive military forces, it's to keep enemies of that country as far from their shores as possible. So here is my question. How on earth can our armed forces achieve their primary objective of keeping their enemies as far from their shores as possible when our borders exist primarily on maps, not in the real world, and when there are already unknown millions or perhaps tens of millions of foreign nationals, aliens, if you will, in our country, living in cities from coast to coast and border to border without any way of knowing their true identities or their nationalities, believe it or not, or their intentions or their affiliations or their backgrounds. So how on earth do you defend a country from those who would come into that country and attack them? Because that's exactly what happened in 1993. It's exactly what happened in 2001 when the World Trade Center for a second time was attacked. 3,000 people were slaughtered instantaneously, and many more people have since died or are dying because of their exposure to the toxins that were spewed into the atmosphere when the towers collapsed. The point is that a country can't defend itself or its citizens unless it has control over who it admits into its territory. You know, homeowners do the very same thing. If you don't believe me, think about it. Just about every house, every apartment has a front door that has a peephole and a doorbell or a door knocker or some kind of signaling device, because it's universally accepted that if a stranger wants to enter into someone's home, they first have to ring the bell or knock on the door to announce their presence to the homeowner or the apartment dweller so that the person inside can look through the peephole and make a reasonable decision as to whether or not it is safe to let that stranger in. It's that simple. I started my career as an immigration inspector, and in fact, this is one of the points that I made in my declaration that I provided the law firm that was retained by Governor Brewer of Arizona to defend her in Arizona against the lawsuit filed by the Justice Department when they implemented their immigration law, SB 1070. I said that for the first 4 years of my career, when I sat in that inspection booth at Kennedy Airport as an immigration inspector, you could say that I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door. So this concept of making a stranger show up at a place so that he can be inspected, which is why we had inspectors, makes common sense. And every other country on the planet does precisely that. If you want to enter a country and you're not a citizen of that country, then you need to be inspected. It's very simple. And there's nothing in the law that deals with race, religion, or ethnicity. It is purely about drawing a clear distinction between a person who is a citizen versus a person who is not a citizen. Again, the term for that is an alien. And that's all that an alien is. Somebody's not a citizen or national of the United States. It's right in our law. So this is what I have been doing ever since 9/11, ever since I realized that 9/11 was probably, arguably, preventable if the Clinton administration had looked at what happened after those two attacks in 1993 and said, you know something, it's failures of the visa process and failures of the immigration system that enabled people to come into our country, hide in plain sight or in the parlance of the 9/11 commission, to which I provided testimony, embed themselves in our country. If they could not have gotten into our country, if they had been unable to hide in plain sight, they could not have attacked us. It's very simple, very fundamental. That's what this is about. When we talk about unemployment rates, and today, they were talking about how the unemployment rate has gone up and jobs are scarce and the economy is faltering. Well, again, they get excited, they, the journalists, or they, the politicians, when 100,000 jobs get created, Meanwhile, there are millions of jobs right now being taken by aliens who shouldn't be here working. And it's not only the bottom-rung jobs where the aliens are being exploited and they're doing day labor work and so forth. That's a big enough problem as it is. But we're also encouraging and allowing aliens to come in by claiming that they have special skills when, in fact, fraud is being committed. So Americans who have the education, Americans who have the skills, are being shut out of the labor market, not because the aliens do the work that they won't do, but because foreign workers are willing to work for far lower wages, and that depresses wages. That means that Americans lose buying power, so they are not as good a consumer as they had been. They can't buy the houses, so the price of real estate drops because nobody can sell the houses. And so we are in a vicious cycle, all because our country refuses to secure the borders, refuses to enforce immigration laws. It's absolutely astonishing. But apparently, we don't have to worry about soft drinks. That problem is being taken care of by Mayor Mike Bloomberg of New York City. You cannot make this stuff up. I want you to know that it's always wonderful joining you at the end of the week on Fridays, as I do, normally from 7 until 8 East Coast time. Of course, today, because of the computer glitch, we didn't get rolling till 30 minutes later than usual, 7:30. But better late than never, I always say. So I thank you for joining me. I hope that you will be joining me again next time. And by the way, folks, if you like the program, and I hope you do, I hope you'll let your friends and neighbors know not only about the Michael Cutler Hour, which, of course, airs Friday evenings, and you can go to the website if you click on the links, and you can also see podcasts or hear podcasts of previous broadcasts. But I also ask that you go to the CAPS Web website, capsweb.org, and please check out talkborder.com. I think we're doing something really different and unique over there at And Magazine. So again, that website, talkborder.com, visit that. Check out the videos and the commentaries. I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll find it informative. And as I always like to say at the end of my commentaries and at the end of my program, democracy is not a spectator sport. Please, folks, get involved. Make a difference. Election day is coming. We, the people, really need to remind the politicians that we're not as dumb as they had hoped that we are. And only we, the people, can do just that. Have a great weekend, everybody. See you next time. So long.